It's 4:06. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Gene Purcell.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we continue our month-long Out in Wisconsin series with a look at the confusion and controversy that led to Wausau's first Pride Parade.
First, though, it's been almost 4 years since Governor Scott Walker rejected $800 million in federal funding for a high-speed rail project in Wisconsin. The state, at least for the foreseeable future, is not going to have high-speed rail. But that doesn't mean that there can't be more passenger rail.
That's the message from the group All Aboard Wisconsin, and they're boarding a train this weekend to try to drive home that point. They're inviting local officials, business owners, disability rights groups, and train enthusiasts to a meeting aboard a passenger train from Chicago to Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, stopping in Madison along the way.
And they are actually chartering a train because, of course, Chicago to Madison is not actually a route right now. Dave Mooma joins us now. He is transit director for the city of Janesville and a board member of All Aboard Wisconsin. Dave, welcome to Central Time.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for joining us. Now, All Aboard Wisconsin is a group that's been around for a year or so, pushing for expanded passenger rail throughout the state of Wisconsin. But the first big push that you're making, the subject of the train ride tomorrow, Chicago to Madison. What is attractive about that route?
Well, looking at the route and looking at the population areas that it serves, it seems to be something that would stand out as a possible passenger rail service. But there are a lot of questions that have to be answered and a lot of hoops to jump through before anything like that would ever happen.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about some of that, because All Aboard Wisconsin is not it's not publicly funded. It is not a government organization. You're talking about a private train service, right? I didn't even know such a thing existed, really, outside of, like, major metro areas or something.
Well, yes, and this particular train is being chartered by an organization that's called Iowa Pacific Holdings, and they really have, bad pun probably, a terrific track record in operating passenger rail services. They operate in 8 states in the USA right now, including Oregon, Colorado, Massachusetts, Texas, New York, and Oklahoma, among others. So they do actually operate this service, and all of the equipment, the locomotives and everything that will be part of this train over the weekend will be supplied by Iowa Pacific.
So you're going on a ride this weekend. You're going to have lots of officials of one kind or another on the trip, trying to interest them in the idea of train travel in Wisconsin for passengers. What's the pitch going to be? What's your elevator speech when you're on that train ride?
Well, I think, first of all, to back up just a little bit, All Aboard Wisconsin has held 4 community forums around the state. In Oshkosh, Eau Claire, La Crosse, and Watertown. And while none of those were particularly proximate to the route we'll be following this weekend, all of those forums underlined the interest in and the desire for additional passenger rail service in the state of Wisconsin. And we look at the train ride this weekend, really, as a 5th public forum. This one aimed a little bit differently at local officials along the route, and tourism and convention folks also who will be on board the train.
So have you done other research as well into market behavior, into transportation desires, or are you pretty much working on the forums right now?
Well, we think the forums are important because it's really a grassroots effort among people in various locations around the state, and shows that the interest in additional passenger rail services is not something that's just being drummed up by rail enthusiasts. It's supported by business, it's supported by local officials, and ordinary folks throughout the state. They see rail travel as easy, they see it as convenient and comfortable, and they would like to see more of it.
But logistically, in Wisconsin, I think it there aren't. So, for example, what are the availability of tracks in the state? I know if you ride Amtrak, you're sort of at the whim of the freights because they get priority. Do we have the tracks that exist in Wisconsin to provide this sort of service?
The state of Wisconsin, and particularly in South Central Wisconsin, have invested really millions of dollars over the last 10 years in the freight rail infrastructure. For example, the tracks that this train will be operating over this weekend were former Milwaukee Road tracks that were in really bad shape by the time the Milwaukee Road finally went out of business. And the state of Wisconsin has put millions of dollars into the infrastructure on this particular part of the railroad, which is operated by freight rail operator Wisconsin and Southern. And so the tracks are in much better shape probably than they have been in the last 30 or 40 years. And while they're not perfect by any means, and you're not going to see anything approaching high-speed train speeds on these tracks, they are a much better infrastructure than they used to be to support something like passenger rail service.
So would these trains, you know, physically look like the trains that we remember? Would they look like an Amtrak train, for example? Is there anything unique about them?
I mean, the train that you're going to see this weekend is one that will look very much like the type of train that operated in the 1950s. The equipment that Iowa Pacific, per se, has, you know, comes from that era, and it's all been refurbished. You know, as far as what type of trains we would see, some of that would depend on the operator, and some of it obviously would depend on where the money would come from to, you know, get the trains to put into service.
One of the things that's been happening in the last couple of years, at least in the southern part of Wisconsin, is a significant proliferation in real low-cost bus service. You know, the mega buses have come to town, the Van Gelders, the Badgers, all those. And there is bus service all over the place. Is that a significant area of competition for you, enough to get to give you pause about the success of trains?
You know, certainly, you know, the existence of several different intercity operators in that area is not so much a cause for concern. I think, though, that it's a cause for encouragement about passenger rail service. It's obvious that there is a large market out there, which the marketplace in the form of the intercity bus operators is catering to, that is looking for an alternative to the private automobile for intercity travel. And we think passenger rail definitely fits into that mix.
And finally, this is not high-speed rail we're talking about. And a couple years ago, that was what we were talking about. I don't know how to phrase this exactly, but is this kind of a poor second cousin to high-speed rail, or is this a legitimate service that can survive in the 21st century?
Well, you're correct. What we're talking about here is not what fits the definition of high-speed rail. High-speed rail in the U.S. anyway is something that operates speeds at or over 110 miles an hour. And while some of that is going on right now in Illinois and in Michigan, certainly without a tremendous amount of infrastructure investment, we're not going to see anything like that. I would say this would be conventional speed, if you want to call it that, and depending on the tracks you're talking, probably something in the neighborhood of 60 miles an hour with the right signaling and safety equipment and things like that. you know, it would take a tremendous investment to talk about high-speed rail because there are a lot of things that go along with that.
And so to wrap up here, after tomorrow's train ride, what happens next?
Well, I think we're very interested in hearing the reaction from the local officials along this route and the convention and tourism people. This is really, as I said, another public forum, and I think it will give us additional information, perhaps additional points that we can make with people in government, local officials, to support the idea of a reinstitution of passenger rail service. But I would caution this, we are very, very early in this effort. So I wouldn't expect to see a train running, you know, within the next year. But I think this is all part of the buildup and the evaluation to see whether, in fact, passenger rail service, and particularly in this corridor, would be a viable option for Wisconsin.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate your time.
We've been speaking with Dave Mooma, a transit manager for the city of Janesville and a board member of All Aboard Wisconsin. The group is holding a meeting aboard a passenger train tomorrow that will run between Chicago and Prairie du Chien, and they're pushing for an expansion of passenger rail with their sights set first on a train route between Madison and Chicago. Today, we're looking at how one town in Wisconsin responded to its first ever LGBT Pride event. Last year, Wausau held its first event for equality. It was the outcome of what was initially proposed as a first-ever Pride parade.
The community's response to that initial proposal was mixed. One of the aldermen representing downtown Wausau urged the community not to support what he called deviant behavior.
His remarks at a town meeting attracted national media attention, and in the wake of those comments, the man who initially proposed the parade canceled the plans. Instead, with a week's notice, Shannon Thomas, a leader within Wausau's LGBT community, organized a rebranded Event for Equality.
This year is the second year of the event, which will start in Marathon Park in Wausau tomorrow at noon. Joining us now from WPR Studio in Wausau is Shannon Thomas, the organizer of the Wausau Event for Equality. We also invited Alderman David Nutting to join the program. He declined. Shannon, welcome to Central Time.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for asking me to come on the show.
Well, I want to start by listening to the remarks that Alderman David Nutting made in reference to last year's event. Let's listen.
As the officially elected representative of aldermen of the 3rd District of the City of Wausau and the same district supervisor of Marathon County, State of Wisconsin, I represent an overwhelming majority of District 3 residents who oppose allowing a parade of deviant behaving individuals to be escorted by public law enforcement members through the very heart of our family-oriented city to a beautiful family-oriented public park, where no doubt their choice of indecent behavior will be on full display for influential children and the media to proclaim it worldwide. This isn't speech, this is behavior. I ask that all residents stay away from the parade, or if you do go, stand with your back to the parade of deviant behaving individuals. I respectfully ask for our various media outlets to pay little or no attention to the parade, just as you do to any other parade in this city. This parade does not reflect what the city of Wausau wants to be known by. And as the duly elected official of this district, that is the route as well as the ending, I must strongly state our district's opposition to this event.
Wausau Alderman David Nutting, last year after a proposal for a Pride Day was floated in Wausau. Now, Shannon, let's get to you. Before we get to the backstory leading to the equality event that you ended up organizing, just what was your reaction hearing that from a political leader in your community?
Shock, anger, and surprise, and the immediate need to get something done and taken care of after hearing that statement. I couldn't believe that he would say that, but once he did, I was put into action.
Do you think he represents a current of opinion in Wausau? Is it just him, or did a lot of people feel that way at that point, do you think?
Absolutely not. I had I'm fairly active in the community, and I had many business owners, family members, members of our community approach me saying David Nutting did not represent them and their opinion. And clearly, with 1 week of organizing, I had over 400 people attend the Event for Equality last year. So that is a good sign that the majority of Wausau is not in agreement with him.
So the event that ended up happening and the event that was initially proposed are kind of two different things. What was the first you heard of an attempt to organize a Pride Day event in Wausau?
Well, we had heard something from a man named Dax Bouvier that he had put on Craigslist that he was organizing a Pride parade. I am a part of the LGBT community. I'm a pretty central figure, and we hadn't heard of him or this parade. We kind of thought it was just some hoax at first. Then these pink flyers started showing up around town proclaiming that the parade was happening and that 20-plus businesses were going to be involved. However, the only gay bar that we have in town hadn't even been approached. So we still kind of blew it off at this point. And even though the flyers were out, didn't think it was going to be a serious thing. And we were just going to kind of let it go to the wayside, and not a lot of people were planning to support it or be there. But after David Nutting released his comments, that's when the March for Equality spurred into action, and it did definitely become a big event.
Somewhere along the line, the still mysterious person behind the apparent attempt to have this Pride parade dropped his plans. What do you know about that happening?
Absolutely. Well, in order to have any event happen, you do definitely need insurance. And he had not paid for his insurance. And about a week before it happened, he said that, for my recollection, he said that because of the negative comments, he was withdrawing his Pride parade. However, he never did pay for the appropriate insurance for the event. And I can tell you that I really received very minimal negative comments when I did the planning myself. So I'm not quite sure where his comments were coming from.
So there you were. A parade, Pride, had been apparently planned and then abandoned. These comments had been made. You felt the need to still do something. Why was it important to you that something did end up happening on that day after all?
Well, I didn't know who this person was and what he had planned. And I am a central figure in the community. I'm a mother. I'm a homeowner. I'm an employee. And I'm also a lesbian. And I'm very proud of that. And I represent our family-oriented WASA. And so does my child. And I wanted to be sure that like-minded individuals had a voice in the fight for equality for people of all sexual orientations and gender identities. So I really, instead of just being a pride parade, I wanted to turn it into an equality march, where a lot of times, I think, especially in small towns, people don't realize how many people are affected by the discrimination against the LGBT community. And I really wanted to show that your coworkers, your neighbors, people you might not even realize really are affected by this. So I asked for a peaceful march. I used Facebook a lot, actually. That was my primary thing. Also released a press release and talked to the media a lot. They were wonderful with me. And we managed to round up over 400 people in a week.
You mentioned discrimination against the LGBT community in the WASA area. Have you personally encountered negative responses to who you are, to your family in WASA?
I have. I mean, I'm certainly an out individual, I do not hide that with any employers or anybody in my family. But, I haven't experienced as much as you may think, you know, from a small town. You may think that's just because you're a smaller town, you might be more sheltered, but really it's been overwhelming support. I have a wonderful church that accepts me for who I am, my family, my coworkers. It's just really finding your niche and educating and letting people know that just because we're part of the LGBT community, we're just like everybody else.
Would you want to share a story of what you have encountered? I know you're focusing on the positive there, but what kind of things might you run into from time to time?
I've had a few cowardly attempts of things yelled at my house from passing cars because I do have a pride flag that hangs out in front of my house. I had a couple of emails prior to the march last year. They weren't mean per se, but they were from religious figures in the community saying that it wasn't too late to redeem myself, and if I repented, I wouldn't go to hell and that sort of a thing. But most of all, except for the cowardly ones, it was respectful, and I understand that people are concerned and they have a message to deliver themselves, and I respect that. I just hope it will continue to be done in a peaceful manner.
Well, set the scene for us. You had a week to set this up briefly. What was last year's Equality Day event like?
It was amazing. It was shocking. Like I said, the majority of it was on Facebook. And really, looking back, I'm thankful for the fake Pride Parade and the negative comments, because negative attention is still attention, and it definitely woke up our town and attracted people from all over the place. So I assumed that there would probably be maybe 50 to 75 people there, and I was excited for that number. I thought that would be a great number. As a resident of the town for a long time, usually when there's any kind of demonstration marches, they're not necessarily that big. So when 400 people showed up and we had a line that went all the way down the highway from one end of town to the other, I just was blown away. And I think it was weeks later, I was still in shock for the support that we received.
We're speaking with Shannon Thomas, the organizer of WASA's Event for Equality. That was last year's. Coming up, we'll talk about plans for tomorrow's event. This is part of our month-long Out in Wisconsin series. More coming up, and we want to hear from you.
That's right. What do you think the role of these kinds of events is in your community? If you live in a community now that doesn't have a Pride event, how would you feel about having one in your town? And how do you feel about Alderman Nutting's remarks? How does your community respond to its LGBT community? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
That's 800-642-1234. We'll take your calls in just a bit after a look at the news from Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
I'm Gene Purcell. We're continuing our conversation with Shannon Thomas, the organizer of Wausau's Event for Equality. Tomorrow marks the second year that the event is taking place.
And we'd like to hear from you. What do you think the role of Pride events is for the LGBT community, for the wider community in the cities and towns they take place in? If you live in a community that doesn't have a Pride event of some sort, how would you feel about having one there? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Connie on the line in Portage. Connie, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I have a question. I'm a straight, and I have nothing against gay people, and what she's doing I think is wonderful, but I have a question. I don't put a flag out in front of my house saying I'm straight. Don't you think by putting a flag in front of your house, you might aggravate people and make them sort of go against what you're trying to do?
Connie, thanks for the call. Shannon, your response?
Well, you know, fighting for rights and to end discrimination, no offense, but most of the time straight people aren't really discriminated against as it's a social norm. So showing that I am proud of who I am and having that in front of my house, I would rather have the attention that it brings and the positive things that come with it and have to deal with a little bit of negative attention as well.
Let's look at the idea of pride from two angles. First, how it makes people in the LGBT community feel to be out and overtly proud of it. What does that do for morale and how you feel you fit into a community?
Well, it's definitely important for people to come together, particularly in small towns where you don't really have an outlet of people that are part of the LGBT community, and coming together to support each other, to share your struggles and the fight against discrimination is incredibly important. And not only is it members of the LGBT community, though, we've had allies, we've had, you know, families that believe that this discrimination needs to end that aren't necessarily part of the community themselves, and it's wonderful to see how many people support us.
And then the second part of that I wanted to ask was, what does having that kind of overt pride, whether it's an event or the flag on your window, what does that tell the rest of the community, in your case, the local Wausau area?
It shows that I'm proud of who I am, that I'm not going to hide who I am, and that I can be a member of this community, a mother, employee, homeowner, all those wonderful things, as well as being part of the LGBT community. I'm just like everybody else, and I'm very proud of that, and I want to make sure it's shown.
Now, earlier we played a clip of an alderman in Wausau talking about the event, very opposed to having any kind of pride event, it sounded like. Have you talked to that alderman and his supporters?
I have not. I have not had any opportunity that I've had to speak with him. He is not elected to be part of that, so I have not spoken to him.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Ellen on the line in Brookfield. Ellen, hi. You're on the air.
Hey there. Well, you know, I couldn't disagree more with a comment that says, you know, I'm straight and I don't understand, you know, why somebody needs to proclaim that they're gay. I'm majority rural, and I don't need to say anything. And for nothing, no reason other than being born a certain way, that somebody has to fight for the simple rights that I've had, that Liz Taylor can have after how many marriages that my sister, after three marriages, has. I think that the only way anybody comes to recognize that people who live in a lesser position are living in a lesser position is for it to be put in our faces. And for anyone to have a reaction about that other than, well, I never gave that a thought. I never think about people's sex lives, you know. I just don't think about them. So for anybody to get caught up in that doesn't make sense to me. But certainly those who fight for their rights need to put that out there for others to see. Otherwise, we don't think about it. We don't think about those things that we're not aware of.
Ellen, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Ellen, disagreeing with the previous caller. Your thoughts, Shannon?
Now, I think that was beautifully stated, and I couldn't have said it better myself. I appreciate her calling and sharing those comments.
So let's look toward tomorrow's event. The controversy of last year is behind us more. What are you expecting tomorrow?
Absolutely. We are definitely growing the event. We plan to do it every year. I have a wonderful board of directors that have been supporting me. We're on the way to make it into a nonprofit organization. Tomorrow we are having the march, and we will always have the march. It will start at noon sharp from Marathon Park, and it will go to the 400 block. Then from 1 till 4 o'clock, it is the event for equality. We have different organizations and clubs that represent the fight to end discrimination of people of all gender orientations and sexual affiliations. And so we are going to have that event going on. We have a Pride headliner throughout Wisconsin, Lizzie Desi, who will be performing twice. We have a few speakers. We have music. We have kids' crafts. And it will be a family fun day.
We'll go back to the phones with Dan and McQuanago. Dan, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I also kind of going back to what the previous caller was saying about the flag. I'm really hoping for a day when, you know, we don't have to be, and I hope this isn't taken the wrong way, proud, you know, to be gay or lesbian, where it's just accepted as a norm and, you know, just normal people. And I just think what you're doing is great and keep it up.
Thank you.
Well, let's talk about what might have changed in the last year. Some big things. Public opinion polls showing support for same-sex marriage, basically a reversal of the numbers in the election on the constitutional amendment that banned same-sex marriage. And, of course, a judge's ruling overturning that ban, though that ruling is on hold for the time being. How do you see things changing in terms of public opinion, Shannon?
Well, you can't stop progress. And like the previous caller had said, the more that it's out there, the more that people draw attention, the more that people will be aware and educated, and discrimination will turn. And I pray that there will be a day where it will end. That's why these Pride events are so very important, to show that, you know, it's not just about our sex life. It's the fact that I'm denied the right to marry, that I am denied these things that really are based on personal opinion, religious beliefs, and have no place in the political system. So I feel positive. I was definitely shocked when the same-sex marriage amendment was overturned. And now that it's on hold, it's okay. I am confident that it will turn the right way again, and we will continue moving forward.
Back to our callers now with Alan on the line in Medford. Alan, hi.
Hi. I totally disagree with it. It shouldn't be crammed down our throats to the straight people, because we don't sit there and make parades up to go against them. And I'm really glad they overturned it in the court. And I'm a new listener to Wisconsin Public Radio in the last 2 weeks. This program, to me, just made it very disgusting. I think I'm going to go back to my XM radio and pay for radio where I don't have to listen to that.
Alan, sorry if we lose you as a listener, but somebody who's not happy with this event, he says, being put in the face of the straight community. Shannon.
Yes, and I'm sorry that he's not happy either. I respect his opinion, and I know that he wants to deliver a message as well. And if he chooses to come and deliver it tomorrow, I hope he does it in a peaceful way, as we will be as well.
Thanks for the call. We'll go to Ian now in northwestern Wisconsin. Ian, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to say thank you for being on the air and letting everybody throughout the state know that there are gay people, not only in every part of Wisconsin, but all over the U.S. and the world as well. And I know that in the last couple of years, with more and more people in the entertainment business, in everywhere, just coming out and being open and being proud, my views on gay marriage and gay rights have evolved, and I hope that more people get the courage to come out and be proud of how they're born and who they are.
Thanks,
Thank
Ian.
You.
Shannon?
Thank you so much. I'm kind of tearing up over here, but I really appreciate you calling in and saying that. That means a lot. And every time I hear anybody say that their opinions are evolving and they're seeing it in a different way and they're starting to realize that just because you are one way doesn't mean you can't accept people for who they are, it's so moving, and I really appreciate it.
Well, on the eve, Shannon, of the Event for Equality tomorrow in Wausau, what does LGBT equality look like to you there in Wausau?
It looks beautiful. It really does. I'm so proud of our city and for everybody who comes and travels to our city. And we've had so many people approach us saying they want to start events in their town, and how do they start? And we're mentoring these grassroots organizations, and it just makes my heart full. I'm so excited, and I can't wait for tomorrow. I know it's going to be a beautiful day. Whether it rains or not, it's going to be gorgeous.
Shannon, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
That's Shannon Thomas. She's the organizer of Wausau's Event for Equality. She launched the Equality March after an alderman in her community urged Wausau to not attend or support an LGBT pride parade originally planned in the city. Again, that second Event for Equality takes place tomorrow at noon at Marathon Park in Wausau.
This conversation has been part of our month-long Out in Wisconsin series. Every Friday in June at this time, we are featuring stories from Wisconsin's LGBT community. And to listen to past interviews, go to the Central Time Facebook page. Next week, we'll be speaking with a member of the Native American Two-Spirit community.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell.
Noah Ovshinsky joins us in the studio for his weekly roundup of the top news in Wisconsin. We've got big job numbers and some legal documents to talk about today. Hey, Noah.
Hey, good afternoon, and happy Friday.
Happy Friday to you as well. Well, the big story, a bit of a bombshell dropped yesterday. These documents released in the what's being called the John Doe 2 investigation. First, the story so far, what are the basics on these documents, the hundreds of pages of them?
Yeah, and as a quick recap, this is an investigation that's been going on for about 2 years. And this is really the first time we've gotten an in-depth look at what the prosecutors are actually accusing or were accusing in the investigation. And they clearly say, alleging that Governor Walker was at the center of a criminal scheme to bypass Wisconsin election laws, both in 2011 and 2012, which, as you might recall, were during the recall elections. And the laws in question generally have to do with, you know, the coordination between candidates and outside groups and the kinds of ads and things that those outside groups can run.
And coordinating fundraising efforts and that sort of thing.
Exactly, right, exactly.
So what have we heard from the governor since all this came out yesterday?
So since those documents were unsealed, the governor has really been on the offensive. He hasn't backed out of any public appearances. In fact, he's made himself available to the media at those events to take questions on this controversy. He appeared on Fox and Friends this morning. His campaign has issued press releases countering the allegations contained in the court documents. In fact, a release was sent out announcing a new campaign ad attacking Mary Burke, for things unrelated to the John Doe investigation, but nonetheless, turning up heat on the Burke campaign at this time. And also this morning, his campaign released a column authored by the governor that criticizes the media coverage of the John Doe investigation since these documents were released.
So a lot of mediums there, but what's the message? What's the governor saying for the most part about this?
The governor says in very clear language that the allegations are false and that they are politically motivated. One of the first things he's pointed out is that, you know, he was never charged during the course of the investigation. And he's quick to note that the two judges, one at the state level and one at the federal level, both have found that there was not enough evidence of wrongdoing to both, pursue subpoenas and felt that there was no evidence to support the investigation. And in fact, one of those judges has suspended that investigation because of that lack of evidence of wrongdoing.
And you just showed me before we came back on the air, one of the judges you just mentioned has responded to the release of these documents now.
Yeah, Judge Rudolph Randa, who was actually the judge, the federal judge, who suspended the investigation several weeks ago, actually issued an order really strongly criticizing the prosecutors in the investigation for not opposing the unsealing of these additional court documents. He goes on to say in the order that the defendants, in this case the defendants are the prosecutors, by their position appear to seek refuge in the court of public opinion, having lost in this court on the law. So clearly the judge is implying that the prosecutors weren't fighting the release of these documents because they thought that, you know, it would get the truth out there or something like that.
And as I understand it, for Judge Easterbrook to release these, the prosecutors had to agree and the conservative outside group that was trying to get the investigation stopped also agreed to the release of these documents. I may have that wrong.
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not 100% on that. Mm-hmm. Regardless, I find it very interesting that the judge in this case, in the lawsuit that ended with the suspension of this investigation, I find it very interesting that he issued an order not long after these documents were released, actually criticizing the prosecutors for not fighting their release.
And have we heard anything from the prosecutors themselves since these came out?
Well, you know, of course, there's a chance that this investigation could restart if the Court of Appeals allows it to. And so the prosecutors are keeping a low profile. Obviously, they don't want to, you know, contaminate the investigation if it restarts. It also, I think, bears acknowledging that during the course of, I think, the almost 2-year history of this investigation, I can't remember the prosecutors actually ever commenting publicly on it because of, you know, the confidential nature of a John Doe investigation. So to me, and I think probably to most people, it's not surprising that they're remaining quiet right now.
Well, I mentioned this to our reporter Chuck Kornbach yesterday. This is, as you say, or has been, a confidential investigation. If the appeals court allows it to continue, it's a lot less confidential now that all these documents are out there.
Exactly. I mean, right now, we have the basis of the allegations, at least the allegations as the prosecutors see them. They're out in the public. You know, where that investigation goes, if in fact it is restarted, who's to say? But certainly it's a lot murkier now that this information is out there.
And two judges, I think the governor had mentioned, took action to quash subpoenas, suspend the investigation. Has that been the only word so far on this?
There was one other judge involved in this case who actually did think there was enough evidence to issue subpoenas in the first place during the course of this investigation. So, you know, at the judicial level, there is some disagreement, you know, as to whether or not there is evidence of wrongdoing.
Well, we leave a lot of these stories here. We'll see what the next court up decides about how this moves forward.
Right now, it's in the Court of Appeals in Chicago.
So other big news yesterday got a little overshadowed, I think, by this one, but some new job numbers. These are the ones that people look at as the more solid ones, right?
Right. These job numbers are they're actually technically called the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages, which is a very technical name. But this is considered to be the gold standard of employment data, the most rock solid numbers we have that look at unemployment and employment in the state of Wisconsin. And what this data, which was released yesterday, showed was that Wisconsin ranked 37th in the nation in 2013 in private sector growth.
And this takes us to the end of 2013. Yeah. Part of the reason these numbers are so good is that they take time to compile.
Exactly. It takes several months. That's why we're getting them now in June, even though they cover all of 2013. That number, 37th in the nation, you know, that's far below the 1.2% growth that Wisconsin saw is far below the national average and puts us nearly dead last among our Midwest neighbors. I think only Illinois posted worse numbers than Wisconsin.
I remember leading up to the recall election, we were watching those monthly numbers, which I think most people agreed aren't as reliable. And yet we spent a lot of time talking about them. They were a big election issue. These quarterly numbers, going to be a big election issue this year?
Absolutely, because again, this looks at three years of Governor Walker's term. And again, these are the gold standard numbers. So this gives us a very clear idea of how far the governor has gone in creating what he promised to create, which was 250,000 new jobs in his first term.
There's always the question, how much do governors really have control over how many jobs get created in their state?
Yeah, I mean, economists argue that governors can actually do very little to affect a job creation. So, you know, if that's in fact true, you know, it's unclear what these numbers actually say about Governor Walker's stewardship of the economy, but they do present a political problem. As I mentioned, you know, he committed to helping the state create 250,000 new jobs in his first term, and this kind of job growth is nowhere near that.
This is an issue I know you and the news department are going to be tracking pretty heavily between now and November.
Yeah, and as you'll hear coming up on the show, actually, Sean Johnson crunched the numbers for his series that ends today that's been looking at some of the promises Governor Walker made in his 2010 campaign. And it's clear that at this rate, it's going to be a while before the state adds that 250,000 new jobs.
Well, a little time for another issue. There's been a lot of talk lately about how we transport oil, natural gas, with the fracking boom, natural gas boom. Something I didn't know about, there's talk about an older, already existing pipeline. Now, what's the story?
Yeah, so a group of U.S. and Canadian citizens that advises the Great Lakes Fishery Commission has recommended that Enbridge, the pipeline company, replace one of their pipelines that runs under the Mackinac Straits. And if you don't know your geography, the Mackinac Straits are where Lakes Michigan and Huron actually meet.
Mm-hmm. And where the two peninsulas of Michigan are separated by a little bit of water there. Who are these advisors? Who are the stakeholders here?
Yeah, these advisors represent a range of stakeholders, really. Charter fishermen, commercial fishermen, government officials, citizens. And they argue that this, you know, 60-year-old pipeline is at risk of failing and could create an environmental disaster in an especially sensitive area.
Any particular reason to worry about it now, this time of year?
Well, it's sensitive because at this particular point, you know, the currents are very, very strong in that area if you've ever been there. I mean, they are incredibly strong. And any spill could move quickly and farther than what might normally happen in calm waters.
So this isn't right off of Wisconsin, but could it affect Wisconsin in the event of a spill? Is that part of the concern? Absolutely.
Again, this is where Lakes Michigan and Lake Huron meet. Of course, we have an entire coastline on Lake Michigan, so certainly relevant to Wisconsin.
And what's the disagreement, I guess, from the company?
Enbridge argues the pipeline is safe and that there is no sign it needs repairs or replacement. The company also says that if there happened to be a spill, that it would be quickly contained by the company.
And I guess this company has some track record with a spill?
There are a lot of people who are skeptical of claims like that, you know, that these spills can be quickly contained, especially coming from Enbridge. The company was heavily criticized for its cleanup efforts after the pipeline rupture in, I think it was 2010, which led to crude oil spilling into the Kalamazoo River in Michigan. And that cleanup was slow and, in fact, is still going on as we speak.
The next step on this pipeline?
Yeah, the Great Lakes Fishery Commission is expected to talk about this proposal or this recommendation to replace that pipeline at their next meeting in December.
Quite a ways off. Noah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It was good to be here. Thanks.
It's Noah Ovshinsky, our news guy on Central Time, officially assistant news director at WPR. He joins us each Friday at this time to round up the top state news stories of the week.